B-Pod Studios.
Good morning, Dan.
What's going on, bud? How are you?
Doing great. It's great to have you on with us yet again, my man. We hope to talk to you a lot more throughout the football season. But first thing, we got to get some controversy out of your way. You're not a controversial man. You take things head on. However, you are being attacked by your colleagues at ESPN due to your spice selections. What's the story there?
Well, first of all, I was on set on Monday, and Ryan Clark was remote, and he made a comment about he kind of used a movie reference or something, and I didn't get it. So then Dom Foxworth yesterday was like, Ryan, that's on you. You had mayonnaise sitting on set referencing me to mayonnaise. So I was like, whoa, 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 whoa here. And so that comment led us down a path of me and not spicing my food up really with anything besides salt and pepper. I'm a simple man, dude. Like, I don't eat a lot of – I eat chicken and rice more often than not. I don't need different foods, and I don't need them spiced either.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting. What about condiments? Ketchup, mustard, anything?
Mustard is disgusting. I don't understand how anybody eats mustard. I'll put ketchup on a lot of stuff, but I don't understand how someone goes, you know what? This is going to make my food taste better. Let me throw some mustard on it.
Wow. So you don't have like garlic powder or anything like that? Like no spices like that? Just the salt and the pepper?
No, yeah, just salt and pepper, and I don't even really use those.
This is fascinating to me. Fascinating. Then we'll have this.
I don't really eat breakfast or lunch either, dude. Like I don't eat a ton, but dinner time I'll smash food. But no, I'm actually simple.
That's amazing to me. We'll go in more into this a little bit later, maybe in the season. And with the Eagles 0-2, maybe things will continue to spiral out of control. We'll be talking more about spices. But no. In all seriousness, did you hear the cut with Doug Peterson acknowledging a regression with Carson Wentz? He was asked the question, why has there been a regression? And the head coach, Doug Peterson, said, oh, well, that's a good question. He didn't sidestep it. He didn't say, oh, well, I wouldn't say regression. I'd say that he had some struggles. Whatever. What did you make of that whole back and forth with Doug Peterson in the media on Monday?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, just for someone who's paid attention to it a lot over the last couple of years, probably like you guys have, like I kind of like and appreciate when Doug gets a little feisty. I think it forces, I mean, he's an ex-athlete, he's an ex-player, right? So it forces them to lock in a little bit more. And so and just be very, very purposeful with what they're doing. Listen, it would be impossible for him to state that Carson has not taken a step back as of right now. Mm-hmm. I know it's two games, but it'd be impossible for him to run from that. I did not like the fact that he goes, that's a good question.
Right.
Because you're the coach. So you got to tell, like, if I can sit here and watch the tape and figure out ways or point to ways that the regression is happening or reasons why, then I want you to be able to do that as well. And I would have loved for Doug Peterson to go, you know what? There has been an regression with some of his mechanics. And so we have to get that fixed, and that's on us as coaches. I got to get his left leg fixed, because when he overstrides and that left leg straightens out, that ball goes everywhere. That's the case for every quarterback as well. You know what he has regressed with the fact of him pressing with the football. So I've got to get him to understand, and I think there's ways to do this, to understand when I want him to press and when I don't. And so I would have liked him to say, yes, but. And kind of give the reasons why and how they're going to fix it.
So when you watch Carson Wentz, you just went through some of the mechanical issues right there.
Yeah.
Now, the J.J. Arcega-Whiteside interception in the end zone, I didn't have a problem. I mean, yeah, his mechanics looked off. He did look like he was facing one way, throwing another. But the decision-making is what jumped out at me. Arcega-Whiteside was much more open earlier in that route. Is the decision-making with Carson Wentz, by your evaluation, okay?
So the decision making falls under two umbrellas, right? Hey, was it schematically the right decision, and was it situationally the right decision? That one is a 0-for-2 on both. So I don't think like there's this terrible decision making when it comes to who to throw the football to on tape, but the situational decision making is the one that both in week one and week two that is not where it needs to be. I'll take the Arcega-Whiteside play and kind of talk about that. First of all, mechanically, he was fine. He's a guy that, you know, he's not going to have his feet set all the time. He doesn't need to. That's kind of what makes him special. He can be a funny body thrower. But when the left leg straightens, that's an issue. So it wasn't on that play. Here's why the Arcega-Whiteside interception is so head scratching and mind numbing and just bluntly stupid. First of all, situationally, you're going on a drive and you've run the football down the field relatively well. You're in field goal range. Two, at worst, your job as a quarterback in that situation is to leave that drive down two, right? With that field goal getting kicked and momentum going in your way. Three, it's first and 10. And this is really like, I really want to dive into some of the conversation with the coach and quarterback relationship. First and 10, and I'm calling a movement pass, a play action pass. There's kind of two types. Hey, let's just get the ball out of our hands for a completion here. You know, like worst case scenario, 5 or 6 yards, or a play action pass where we want to take our shots. This one was just one of those. I just want to get you out of the pocket, get you on the move, and get one of those shorter completions. So the understanding of why the coach is calling that play is for me greatest kind of growth has to happen week two to week three. Know why Doug called that play. It's not for you to push the ball into the end zone in that moment. Second of all, Arcega Whiteside's number four in that progression. He's number four. You might get to number four in a progression once a game, if that. This was not an alert. This was not a potential one-on-one matchup where you could throw a go route. And so that right there is the perfect example of you are trying to do too much. You're trying to force it. It's not needed. And so, again, I want to see the growth from coach to quarterback and quarterback to coach of kind of talking to each other with the play and ball.
Dan, the stuff that you bring up are stuff that we can see, and rightfully so, and that's the concerning part. But when you go a little deeper into it, and when like you experts watch these things and then let it be known what's going on, what I saw a lot of was he missed a lot of throws, too, where guys were open. He's not seeing things all that well. Are you seeing that also? Is Carson reading the field properly?
I think he's seeing the field fine. Listen, some balls are going to be put into traffic. They're going to be put into harm's way. That's just part of playing aggressive at the quarterback position. So this isn't something on tape where I go, oh, dude, it's cover two, and he thinks it's cover three. Or, you know, where you intellectually is the understanding it. Windows close when you play zone defenses. They open when you play zone defenses. So sometimes, you know, there's a couple crossing routes where you go, man, how did that happen? A receiver took a step too far. Carson's a blink too late. So, you know, the ball is going to be put into the zone windows in aggressive fashion. So to the naked eye, it would look like, what are you looking at? So seeing the field completely fine. Some of those misses, again, are the mechanical aspects of things where he's just that front leg is crushing him. But that being said, the understanding of where you want to go with the football and why is there. That's why when we've been asked all week on television, you know, do you think the 0-2 Eagles can turn it around? My answer has been yes, because do they have the people to do it? I would argue that they do. And the quarterbacks, the issues are fixable. The issues are easily correctable. And so he's seeing the field fine.
Speaking with Dan Orlovsky, ESPN, who is it more on? I mean, I would assume it's on the player to really correct it, but what can the coach-player relationship, how does that work itself out to get more from the player?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's sitting down and watching that tape on Monday and really trying to be honest about, hey, what's going on? What are we doing wrong here? And finding the stuff that those misses are tied to. Hey, why did you throw this ball? Like, well, I need you to tell me why. And just figuring out where he is mentally. And then when you go out to practice, you know, there's got to be a very conscious plan of how they want to attack some of those deficiencies right now. You know, like I said this on Monday, he looks like a player right now that hasn't played football in 8 months. Now there's guys in the NFL that haven't either that are excelling. So I got to figure out why you look like the guy who hasn't, right? And so it starts with practice. I think that there needs to be probably more emphasis on individual work. And we are going to spend 10 minutes on our individual work today where we're going to work on, listen, he's a big 6'5" dude, right? Big, tall guy. When guys like us, when we strain and we overstride, that's when we get crazy. Think about how, you know, everyone tells you get into an athletic stance. When you're playing shortstop, it's get your feet shoulder width apart. Well, when he strains to make some of these throws, he goes double that width, and that's when you lose your center of gravity and the balance to play the position. So I would want to spend more time in individual with him, just going over, getting his feet back underneath him, getting through progressions and getting him through some quarterback drills where he's got to move and then get his feet back underneath him. I think that's a big part of his struggles. And then having a very clear plan of, you know, maybe talking more through practice and through the game. You know, I'm going to take everybody into a headset communication-wise. I don't know if this is happening or not, but I would love for it to be like, hey, Carson, listen, man, I'm going to call this play. This is just for us to get a completion, bud. Get a second down. You're just framing the quarterback's mind for the reason you're calling that play. Hey, Carson, listen, I want to take a shot here. If it's not there, just get it out of your hands to our check down, and we'll call another shot. Sean McVay used to always be the best at that. Sean would say, guys, I'm going to call this play. This is going to be our play-action shot right here, and I want us to be aggressive. Listen, if it's not there, throw the check down, look to the sideline, and tell me, call a better play. And I don't know if that's happening or if it's not happening, but I do know this. If it's not happening, that needs to happen more. That needs to be, and that's not hey, we got to babysit this kid. That is framing the quarterback's mind for the moment, especially a quarterback that right now his play is telling you he's trying too hard.
Speaking with the great Dan Orlovsky, so yesterday this came up during the media session with Doug Peterson. He was asked by a local reporter about the layup throws for Carson Wentz and missing on those layup throws. There was a stat that came out from Paul Hambakidis about 15 of 20 incomplete passes from Carson Wentz came with a clean pocket. So only 5 of those he was actually pressured on. Are there layup throws? I mean, it sounds like from what you're giving me here with Sean McVay, there are those throws that are those bread and butter throws that quarterbacks should make. Do you believe in those easy throws?
Oh, of course, there are.
Okay. Just making sure. Yeah. I mean, I played backup quarterback in high school for one game my freshman year. You played in the NFL. How do I know that? You know that, but Doug Peterson won't acknowledge it.
No, I mean, again, I think, you know, 0-2 in a passionate city, right?
Of course.
Just the reality. Yes, there are layup throws. Philly has had them to be a part of their offense for a long time. I'd argue that was a big part of the success in 17. I'd argue that was a big part of the success at the back end of half of last year. I'd argue that Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid do it a ton. So, yes, there are layup throws. I think what Doug is saying is, like, this is the NFL. Everything that we do is hard, you know, and the understanding of, there's always the challenge of being a play caller, play designer, and the quarterback in the NFL. Nothing is easy. Relatively speaking, if we're just talking NFL terms, yes, there are absolutely layup throws where there's the RPOs, there's the quick flats, there's a hitch, there's a bubble. I mean, those are easy. Those are layups. I would love to see more of them. But here's the thing. I'd say this, like, I think they're calling. I really do on tape. They are calling some of them. There's 3 in the first quarter last week. There's 2 in the third quarter last week where they're calling the layup throw, and the layup throw is there. Just Carson doesn't look at it. And so that's why I have been harping that when you call that play in the headset, Carson, this is one of those easy ones. Just get it out. If it's there, just get it out. Right? It's the extension of the run game type thought process.
Right.
So that's where I think that growth needs to be happening. Again, assuming that it's not.
Dan, I with what Doug Peterson has said this week, I really think he's kind of struggling with, I don't want to take away from Carson Wentz what he is, but at the same time, just like you said, Dan, I don't need him to do too much. How do you find that balance in a game plan going up against Cincinnati this week?
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be great transparency. There's got to be a great understanding, you know, maybe sitting in the quarterback room a little bit more and figuring out how they want to attack. You're right. You don't want to take away I always say this. You want to let the quarterback have their stinger. You want to let them have them be aggressive and never want to take that away from them. But is your theory of how you want to play football right now as a quarterback, is it hurting our football team? Right? And so that's why there's this great communication that needs to happen of, hey, this week, this is our goal. You know, like if I'm Doug Peterson, I could have very clear goals for Carson Wentz this week. Number one, we're going to value the football. We're going to make Cincinnati beat our football team. We are not going to, I don't care if you average 4 yards an attempt. We are not going to allow them to just, we're not going to gift them the football. Second of all, I want you to be absolutely perfect with your decision making. I want 100% out of your decision making. Both, again, understand the scheme of the defense and then situation of football. First of all, let's talk about when we want to choose our aggressive mindset, Carson. Hey, we're not going to be aggressive unless we got first and 10 and they're going to play us in man defense. Other than that, we are just going to be a completion-based offense this week. We're just going to try and be completion. So just that communication can be great. The understanding of quarterback, I want you to see it this way. Coach is seeing it this way. And so, you know, laying out a plan for end result is a win, right? The number one result or goal for this week should be the win. So work backwards. How do we get that win? And I think that the very clear understanding, coach and quarterback, will go a long way.
Dan Orlovsky, nobody breaks it down like you, my friend. I appreciate you coming on with us. And maybe next time we'll talk about some garlic powder. Maybe next time we'll talk about some, like, a nice bumba sauce to put on some things if you like a little spice and flavor. You know, we'll expand your game a little bit. We'll expand your palate.
Yeah, the thing I'm most excited for today is I'm just going to drink this glass of water, probably have some fruit, and then figure out a way to have like a Caesar salad or something tonight.
whoa, Caesar salad. Jeez,
live a little bit.
There you go. Maybe croutons? Croutons or low carb?
You know what? I'll have a couple croutons, no doubt.
Parm crisp, might I suggest.
Very nice.
Very good.
Very nice. Dan, great talking to you, my friend. Thanks so much.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.